any North Star metric will meet three criteria. One is it has to represent the value that a customer gets. The second is it has to be the leading indicator of revenue or business metrics, right? And the third is basically saying that all of your product strategy should be aligned towards this metric.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of How to Product, a podcast series on product management brought to you by PM School, and I'm your host, Arjav Jain. So far in this season, we've looked at how to do product discovery with Terrace at Terrace, and then getting from a minimum viable product to product market fit with Kirti Varun. Today, we're going to look at what success looks like and how to define the North Star metric for your product, and then we go on to talk about the importance of technology for PMs. If you want to step into the shoes of a product manager, do check out pmschool.io for their live program and product case challenges. Without further ado, let's jump into the episode. I have with me Deepak Singh, currently a senior director of products at an academy. Previously, he was the head of products of conversational AI, games and gamification at Flipkart. And he was also the director of growth at MX Player for a brief period too. He recently launched his book, Tech Simplified for PMs and Entrepreneurs, which has been the bestseller number one for 2 weeks straight since launch. It's a pleasure to have you here, Deepak. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Arjav. This is one of the podcasts I've been looking forward to. I think the lineup for these podcasts is really good. So a great job that you folks have done here. But glad to be here. Hoping to have some good discussions forward.
Yes, and thank you so much. Right, I'm going to dive right into the questions. So we talk a lot about success of a product and in a way that, you know, a PM is also measured against the success of his or her own product. How do you go about defining the North Star metric of your product, right? And if you can maybe speak in context of a product you managed at Flipkart or at an academy, that'll help as well.
Yeah, so that's a very good question, right? And something that I have seen a lot of people struggling with, including the founders and product leaders. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that struggle is not so much that you can't measure the metrics, but it's one about, like you rightly said, it's one about is this the right metric to actually gauge PM success on? And the second is, even if you figure out a single metric, is that the only thing you can measure a PM success on, mm-hmm. right? Because it might happen that the product manager is a good one, a great one, in fact, and they're not able to hit the metrics because it's very hard to kind of succeed at all times.
Right.
So I'll take a more holistic view on this one, right? So first mm-hmm. I'll cover the metric part because that's simpler and easier to do.
Sure.
The North Star metric, you know, for any product that I have worked on, and this is after 2019 when I actually thought a lot about this problem in MX Player. I think it's very, very important to define this North Star metric for the product.
Right.
And usually there is a framework that I have come across over time, which has been very, very helpful in kind of figuring out the North Star metric. The first thing, this framework kind of says that any North Star metric will meet three criteria. One is it has to represent the value that a customer gets. The second is it has to be the leading indicator of revenue or business metrics, right? And the third is basically saying that all of your product strategy should be aligned towards this metric. Otherwise, you're doing a disservice as a PM or as a org, that you're calling something as a North Star metric, but then when it comes to strategy or roadmap, you're not even abiding to that, right? So let me give some examples, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the North Star metric for Facebook has been very, very, very popular, right? So monthly active users is what Mark Zuckerberg started with, but over time they moved to daily active users as well and total time spent. Right. If you think of the DAU multiplied by time spent, what it represents is the value that users are getting mm-hmm. from your product, right? If people are coming every day, your DAU will keep increasing. Daily active users is keep increasing. The total time spent will also keep increasing. So it meets the first criteria. The second criteria is it is the leading indicator of business value, because tomorrow, if you want to monetize on Facebook.com, mm-hmm. the more time people spend, the more is your opportunity to put ads, Makes sense. If you think from that perspective, even Instagram and all the social media, Snapchat, everything works like that. And that's why they have this obsession with MAUs and DAUs and total time spent, right? So, and the third is obviously like Mark Zuckerberg and all these founders have been very bullish in pushing the whole team to focus on these certain metrics. In fact, Facebook had this growth team, Chamath Palihapitiya built that.
Okay.
And terrific operator, right? And his ambition was to just capture MAUs and keep increasing them month on month, right? So the first is a metric part, right? It's important to define this North Star metric for any product. I'll leave the bigger examples. I'll go to the more nuanced one where I have worked, right? So back in MX Player, like if you look at the way linear programming has been done on TV, what you'll see in linear programming, you can provide a slot for a primetime show and then other slots for other shows. And you have limited slots, so you can only accommodate so many shows.
That's right.
Netflix or MX Player or these kind of streaming services, they actually break that linear program. They give you a non-linear program, which is at any point of time, I can see Last Night with John Oliver, or I can see whatever the most popular show on Hindi cinema is. Now, the problem that happens is usually in a linear programming, you can easily measure the total engagement of users on a particular show.
Right.
So minutes per user per show. Right. And you can say that this is a good show because people are watching it full. This is a bad show because people are dropping off.
Right.
But in non-linear, how do you accommodate that? And the fact is a lot of people will start from there. Right. Am I making sense?
It makes a lot of sense. Yes.
So in non-linear programming, one of the things that, and I was leading the growth for MX Player, right? And one of the things I struggled with is how do you create one metric that every team is chasing? Because it's very important to align all the vectors, like Elon Musk says, all the vectors in your org.
Right.
And that is when I realized that minutes per impression is a much better metric, because the number of impressions that we get on an app every day on shows is limited. One user at most will check 25 shows by scrolling down. If you don't find those shows on Netflix or MX Player or Hotstar, you'll just leave the app, right? So rather than measuring minutes per user and kind of using that as a North Star metric, we said we'll use minutes per impression, because total impressions on our app is, let's say, 100 million impressions.
Right.
So that's just one of the ways. And I'm not saying it's a big thing, right? It's a small thing, but if you give it enough thought, it actually represents the value that customer gets, because every customer is going to give you 25 impressions.
Right.
You have to ensure they find some show where they spend minutes. So minutes per impression takes that mark.
Right.
Minutes per impression also takes the mark that if it is growing, then you can keep monetizing more on minutes. Right. So that kind of takes that mark also. And it can also become pivotal to your product strategy if you want, because to do this, you can do a lot of things. You can build recommendation engines. You can improve the creatives that you're launching. You can A/B test the creatives that you're launching. You can build a lot of things. You can even test the content that gives you higher minutes per impression and all that. Right.
So makes sense.
That is one way. Right. And same for games. For games, I think a lot of people measure daily active users.
Right.
And my point was, why daily active users? It represents the value that you deliver to user to some extent.
Yeah.
But does not represent the business sort of leading indicator of business, right? In fact, like if I would argue that total minutes spent on games is a much better indicator, because that kind of represents the value you deliver to users. And then the total minutes is increasing. I can introduce ads every 5 minutes and I can make a lot of some money.
Makes sense. Yeah.
And given that we are building games for Flipkart, this was more important. See, if you have games as a standalone app, maybe DAU works.
Right.
Because why would people come to your game if they're not playing it? But in Flipkart, there can be a lot of accidental clicks. In Flipkart, people are coming for shopping. And games is just one of the tabs.
Right.
So which is why DAU is not that great indicator for a game within Flipkart, whereas it can be a good indicator for a game outside Flipkart ecosystem, right? So these are like some of the ways in which you actually, if you define the right metric, you can solve a lot of headache for the team and for the management. Now coming to the second point, Arjo, which is like what else do you measure the PM by?
Right. Just before we go there, right? Just before we go there, I want to quickly touch upon, like, if you had to, like, for this, for just the benefit of our listeners, how would you, what would you define impression as? Right. You mentioned minutes per impression, but what is impression? Yeah.
That's a good point, right? So suppose you go on Netflix, and when you are, what you can do is you can see five shows on the top card.
Right.
Right. And then there are different cards like binge watch shows, thriller shows, and all that. In every one of them, you can see at most five.
Right.
And as you are scrolling down, Netflix is recording your impressions on those cards. It's not a view. A view is when you actually click into one of them and actually view.
Right.
But it actually, like, you are giving impressions, and then you will click, and then you will view something, right?
Makes
so
sense.
Even in social media platforms, right, they count total number of impressions, because you are scrolling down the feed. How many impressions did you create?
Makes sense.
Right? Which is how many posts did you view, but didn't interact with, didn't comment, didn't do anything else, right?
Okay.
Which is why you see in social media, like, they're going for autoplay, because their impressions also translates into views. So
true,
there is a good chance.
That's true. Yeah. But, awesome. Yeah, thanks for breaking that down to the next point that you were talking about.
To the next point, I think, which is where every PM can succeed and should succeed, is culture of the team. Right.
So
culture is where I at least try to measure my PMs against, because if they can set up a very, very strong execution culture, and they can set up rigor in our strategy that we take, the calls that we make through data, through research and everything, I do believe that they have done a good job, even if the North Star metric didn't move.
Okay.
The reason for that is a lot of times you'll struggle to move the North Star metric.
That's true.
And that means that you have to look out for other signals which signify that this PM has done all that was needed to do, and still, like, it has not moved, right? So those are, I would say, two ways in which I usually measure the success of PMs, and I believe that PM should also measure their success.
Right. It's interesting that you brought that up, and I was just reading about Netflix, right? And it took them years to move their North Star metric, which is the number of cancellations, reducing the number of cancellations, right? Because they were already at such a high point. And I think it took them a decade to move that needle. And it's not fair to measure PMs against directly your North Star, right? Like you mentioned.
Exactly. And Arjun, like, to your point, right? Also, it's a function of how the market responds to whatever you're doing, how the competition is doing. If competition is doing a lot, we tend to say PMs are CEO of the product, but they're not making executive decisions, which is impacting all the other consumers in the market. So the control that we have is what we can do and how well can we do it. And the hope is that if we keep doing that, we will hit the mark.
Makes sense.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's how we measure the success or failure of a PM.
Awesome. Yeah. Just quickly moving on from that, right? Another thing that I've experienced for myself also, being a PM at Byju's, is there's an expectation of defining these key metrics with an expected value, right? Of, like, one's a goal and then one is a target. So for example, saying, you know, I believe that this feature will increase engagement by 30%. Now, how can one approach this and actually estimate the impact before launching the feature?
This is a very, very difficult question to answer.
Exactly. Yep.
In fact, like, one of the things that people, like, junior PMs keep bringing to me is, which is sort of the same question, is, you have asked us to use the RISE framework, which is reach, impact, confidence, and effort, right? So reach is basically how many users will this feature reach. Impact is impact per user, like, how will this impact their experience or revenue or whatever that impact metric is.
Right.
Confidence is how confident are we that it will succeed. And then effort is whatever effort, right? So I think confidence is very hard to measure. And confidence multiplied by impact multiplied by reach is basically the overall impact sizing that you have to give before any feature.
Right.
And the matter of the fact is, every engineering manager that you meet, every business person you meet, right, whoever has not experienced a product life cycle will actually ask you that question.
Yep.
So it's a reality that we have to give answer to this question now.
Correct.
First, I think the first step is accepting that it's actually very, very hard to do, right? That acceptance has to come. Otherwise, you'll always operate from an imposter syndrome point of view. You'll right. always feel that you're not adequate. You're not good enough to actually be a PM. Mm. Hmm. I'm saying I, as a PM, and I've been enough in this industry, I right. still struggle with.
Yeah, it is a hard right? problem. So, yeah.
A hard problem.
Yeah.
That said, right, you should, like I said, we will measure the PMs by the rigor they put in hmm. execution, strategy, and everything. So that rigor you can actually build by doing 3 or 4 things, right? The hmm. first thing is you look at the reach of that feature. Right?
Okay.
So something, for example, something on the home page versus something in the profile page.
Right.
You know that the impact is going to much higher if the feature is on the home page. So if you're given like 15 days of engineering to build something, build it on the home page, right? Unless right. let's say profile is broken or something and the impact right. is really high. Build it on the home page because the reach is much higher, right? So reach right. is the first way to kind of do this.
Mm-hmm.
Now the second thing that you can see is you reduce the effort, mm. right? Which is like you say that I will create a small POC to test this. That way, even if impact is not there, I can test out a lot of ideas, and the ones that work, I can build a fully fledged sort of feature
right.
for that.
Right.
This is very, very hard to do because most of the time, PMs tend to build the ideal products.
Right. Yeah.
And, that's a trade-off that you have to make. For I'll give you an example, right? So like one of the gamification features that I was building, mm-hmm. I won't name the company, but think of it like gamification feature everywhere is the same. So I don't need to name the company, but in yeah. gamification feature, what happens is Arjo does something and then I have to give Arjo some reward.
Correct.
Right? That's how it works.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically the simplest way gamification works, that you buy something worth 3,000 rupees, I'll give you 500 rupees coupon. That works
yeah.
in malls.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even on e-commerce websites, even on, let's say, MX Player, like we actually built something that will give you coins for watching whatever 10 minutes, 15 minutes.
All right.
Right? Now, the engineering team was like, this will take a couple of months, right? Mm. That they saw the requirement, they're like, this will take a couple of months. Now, I was a PM, I'm like, we don't have 2 months. What do we do? Like, mm-hmm. help me understand, like, how are we building this? And they're like, we don't have something which can listen the event in real time and disburse the reward. So we have to build that whole thing.
Okay.
Right? Now, your instinct as a PM would be, yeah, I think it is what it is. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is not built yet, and that's a perfectly reasonable line
right.
for line of thought for good PMs. I think excellent PMs, what they do is they will actually go back and they say that, what if I could build something that could test the same hypothesis, mm-hmm. but in a much cheaper way? Because
right.
I don't want to build a feature for 2 months and then fail. Right? The cost of failure is very high.
Right.
So then we basically said that, what if you could run a cron every 24 hours and disburse the reward after 24 hours? We'll make a change in the copy. We'll say that you'll not get immediate reward.
Hmm.
You'll get it after a day.
Right.
And that brought down the effort to 7 days. So
wow, okay.
in that case, right, in fact, driving the cost of failure down or the cost of that feature down also helps you improve the impact, because in the same time you can launch 10 features and your hit rate will be at least 30-40%.
Right.
So overall impact of the team improves, right? So
yeah.
that's basically a very good way to solve this impact problem holistically rather than on a feature level.
Take care. Right, right.
So that's the second thing, like do a lot of POCs.
Mm.
The third is talking to users and taking surveys. Right?
Okay.
Now that is again something that a lot of PMs talk about but don't do.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll give you a very simple example, right? For I was starting to write my book like back in mid of 2020 or 2020. Yeah, mid of 2020.
Okay.
And what I did was I created a very simple LinkedIn survey which asked two questions. One is, do you come from a tech background as a PM? And the second is, do you struggle with tech discussions or not?
Right.
And I realized 70-80% of people actually come from non-tech background, and they actually, like, out of them, another 80% struggles with tech, which is 64% overall PME universe.
Right.
Now, of course, I was wary of the sample size and all, like, some 600 people have replied on this, and should I actually, should this be representative of the overall PM base or not? But it gave me a good sense, right? Your confidence improves after you see this data versus before you were just sitting in a room and all.
Right.
So research and surveys will give you a very good story to tell around feature, even if you can't quantify the impact that it will move by 30%, 40%, right? And finally, like, look at data, right? If you do all these things, if you reduce the scope, you talk to user, you take survey, you look at the reach, finally look at data for the baseline, right? For example, if you know that some similar product has a higher engagement on this feature, that gives you the confidence,
right?
Or if you know that this feature falls in the login flow and a lot of people are dropping off, you can look in the data that around 30% drop off in signups is happening on this step.
Right.
Anything that you do in this step is going to improve it by, let's say, 10-20%. So that also does impact sizing. So a lot of times, I think impact sizing, a problem solving the problem of impact sizing is a lot about generating a lot of ideas, testing them cheaply, looking at baselines, and then finally, you know, optimizing for whatever fits in the RISE framework ultimately.
Awesome. I love the way you broke it down, right? Just so that I'll summarize that. So you look at the reach of the feature, where what's its position? Is it on the homepage? Is it two clicks away? Try to build small POCs that are sort of tested out. And one thing that you said here, which is drive down the cost of failure, which I really loved, right? Talk to your users, get surveys, build confidence in the idea that you have. And then, of course, holistically look at data to sort of measure the impact that your feature could have.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Awesome. I want to take away one thing which you said, which is you built a cron job, right? Now that's cron is something that, so I've studied computer science engineering and I understand it, right? But a lot of people don't, right? So which is a perfect segue to my next question, which is why is it important for PMs to understand technology, right? And how can PMs who don't have traditional tech backgrounds sort of upskill in that area?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Again, see, I think I always struggled with this question when I became PM for the first time, because you see great PMs from both end of spectrum, like people who come from technical background and people who also don't come from technical background.
Yeah.
Like Sundar Pichai is a metallurgical engineer and he went to Stanford, he did MS, MBA and all,
right.
And he is the biggest tech CEOs today, right?
That's true.
Same thing you can say about Steve Jobs. He didn't do coding. He did like all that electronics and all, but he ended up becoming one of the most revered icons in the history of tech. On the other hand, there are CEOs like Satya Nadella, Bill Gates, and even Jeff Bezos. He used to code as a kid, right?
Yep.
So you see like people doing great in tech as a product manager, or as a CEO, even with or without tech background. And that always put me in two minds.
That's right.
But then there was a shift over time. And that shift has been that you at least have to understand that language.
Hmm.
You can't stay in a foreign land where you don't understand that language.
Right?
It will be very hard for you to actually be very efficient. Efficient. I'm talking about efficiencies now. I'm not saying that you can't. You can stay in a foreign land. You can without speaking their language, but it won't be the most efficient way of staying there.
Right.
Efficient way is to actually learn how to understand that language and learn how to speak that language. Right. So that's the level one that I recommend to PMs, which is like start understanding what APIs, backend, SDK, APK, all these things mean.
Right.
You have to start understanding that. And once you understand that, then to speak that language, you need a higher level of proficiency.
Right.
Which is where you have to understand how these different pieces come together and work. And from that perspective, Arjun, right? Like, I don't have a tech background. I didn't do computer science in college and all.
Okay.
What I found is tech is very, very logical.
Yep.
It's almost like mathematics, right? So you can put like 2 + 2 = 4 at all times in tech.
Right.
And which is why once you understand the terminologies and everything, and once you have been through enough iterations of products, And if you have a curious mind and you understand how these products actually work, how different components came together and work, then you can start even speaking that language. You can start asking questions. The same question that I asked, by the way, right? Okay.
Right.
What is taking so much time? Like, what are we building in gamification that we need so much time?
Right.
And this is like, the problem is most of the people are either at this level where they speak and understand tech, or they are at the other end where they don't speak and understand tech.
Right.
Now, there's a big energy barrier between the two. And if you cross that barrier, after that, it's only going to compound the more number of products that you build. Like, throughout your life, you're going to get exposed to games, videos, whatnot, like different kinds of products. And the more products you build, think of the compounding knowledge that you'll build if you're on the other side of the pool.
Right.
That's how I think people should approach it. They should definitely not look at like learning how to code, because you don't code as a PM. You definitely should not try to get very, very deep into something, some particular concept like Web3 or all these things that are coming. You should just try to understand like how computers work, how internet work, how everything, how apps work and how websites work. And possibly like graduate to a place where you can go to your engineering counterpart and ask them to explain how the whole app works in your org.
Right.
Because once you understand that, how the whole app is working on a technical level, and believe me, like you can actually understand that, it's very logical, you can then start asking the right questions and people will be happy for it.
Right.
Right. So that's the first part. Why is it important to sort of understand tech?
Yeah.
I can take the second part if you don't have any question on this one.
No, this makes a lot of sense to me, right? Even I've had engineers who are more than happy to sort of, they love it when PMs sort of are curious, right? And they ask questions on, hey, how is this data flowing from here to here? Why have we taken this approach versus another approach, right? So once you start building this knowledge base for yourself, you can then, it'll come naturally to you the next time you're sort of in that situation. Right?
Yep. So going to like how can they upskill is basically the way at least I did it is, one is I am great at Googling things. Mm-hmm. So whenever I hear a new term, I always go to Google and Google it.
Right.
And I try to understand this. At the same time, I think people do struggle with, like, you have to find websites which explain things in an easier way. Like Webopedia is one website which mm-hmm. does it really well. Wikipedia, on the other hand, because it's written by techies and all, the articles are written and maintained by techies, it's hard to read, right? If you take a Wikipedia article and put it in some writing analyzer, you'll see that people who have postgraduate degrees can read and understand it, but not the ones who have a college degree or something like that.
Right.
So I think figuring out the right resources to read and understand these terms is one part of it. And the second part is basically, again, I think this will be a segue into why I wrote the book, which is like, how do you know, what should you know to build the fundamentals, right?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's also essential to know like, what all do I need to know, after which like I can keep building on this knowledge.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So the second is figuring that out, and the third is actually completing that. So those are basically the three steps, I would say. And once you are done with that, after that, you can keep like whatever new product you come up with, or you can always sit with engineering and you can understand how it works, why it works and all that. You have the basic building blocks, so you'll be able to assimilate everything very, very quickly.
Right. Yeah. So just to summarize that, right, just finding resources where you can sort of figure out this material that you can read in a very simplified way. And then the next part is, how do you know what I should know, right? And that's when you're curious, you're asking around. And then, of course, you complete that loop and then talk to your engineers. Right. Which brings me to my next question, which is, and you sort of touched upon that as well, which is, why you wrote this book, right? Tech Simplified. Now, could you talk a little bit about why a PM should pick it up and read it?
Yeah. So see, I think, first I'll talk about who should not pick it and read it. Like people who come from like good technical background, who have done coding, in industry. I'm not talking about just in college.
Right.
But industry should not pick it and read it, because they would mostly find it basic.
Okay.
Right? What they learned over 4 years in college and like 3-4 years in industry, this is not going to surpass that. Right?
Okay.
So that's not the audience. Mm-hmm. The audience for this is people who like who struggle with holding the conversation with engineers.
Okay.
Who sometimes feel that maybe I don't know it, so maybe I should just accept this answer. Or sometimes like even techies are like, why are you asking us to reduce the timeline when you know that this will take 2 months, 3 months?
Yeah.
Right. So all those difficult conversations, every PM I know, like who at least does not come from tech background, they always have. And those are the PMs who should read this, right? And
right.
The reason I'm saying this is because this tackles three things from a PM perspective. One is the syllabus for PMs, which is not out there.
Right.
You have syllabus for computer science graduates, but
that's
you don't
true.
Have syllabus for product managers. So
yeah.
In 300 pages or less, like it defines the syllabus for PMs. And that syllabus is very, very simple, which is like from basics, you have to start with computers, internet software, websites, apps, DevOps, and then finally understand system design, which is where you break down the architecture of most popular apps and understand how they work.
Nice.
So the book covers like from basics to system design, right?
Okay.
And the third thing that I talked about is simplicity of the writing. So I'm a big fan of Hemingway,
right?
Who wrote like at 5th, 6th grade level, all his books. Like anybody who is 10, 11 years old can actually like read his books. I could not simplify it to that extent, but I did simplify it to 8th grade level. And I actually used the software to track and check and
nice.
Improve that.
Wow,
right?
Okay.
So, which is a reason, like you see, the name of the book is Tech Simplified, written at an 8th grade level from basics to system design.
Nice.
Right? So any PM who is planning to at least understand the tech world should pick it and read it. I know recruiters who are reading it. I know marketers who are reading it. I know
okay.
like people in sales who have a lot of interaction, enterprise sales are
yeah.
reading it.
Yeah.
So if it can help those, I think it can definitely help PMs.
Wow. All right. So you mentioned three tackles. One was that the syllabus is not out there and that is mentioned. The simplicity of the writing. And what was the third one? Did I miss that out? Or
the syllabus is not there, the simplicity of the writing. I
yeah.
think those are the only two.
Oh, two ones. Awesome.
Big data, right?
Yeah. Awesome. All right. So before I let you go, I have one more question for you, which is what do you look for product role hirings, especially right if there are first time movers into a product role?
Yeah, that's actually, it varies case to case, but if I had to tie the thread between all the great hires I had so far in my career, I think there are two things which I essentially look for. One is the enthusiasm. Mm. And enthusiasm not in their words, but in their actions. Like some of the candidates I meet, they're like, I'm very interested in this role. Of course, you are interested in this role,
yeah.
right? It pays well. It's one of the like most sought after role in tech industry. Anybody can do it. And by that, I mean anybody with the enthusiasm and zeal can actually do it.
That's
I
true.
Actually believe that.
That's true.
But enthusiasm in actions is hard to fake, which is like, have they built the understanding and research for the role? Have they researched for the company they are interviewing for? Have they checked my app?
Hmm.
Do they even like, are they even interested in how my application works or my website works?
Right.
In fact, like some of the good candidates, they actually come up with a lot of suggestions for the apps and websites that
yeah.
I'm already working on.
Yeah.
So that enthusiasm, the real enthusiasm from the candidates is something that I definitely look for, because without that, it's just a wishful thinking
That's
that
true.
People have.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is groundwork, right? So beyond the enthusiasm, how much preparation did they have? Did they are and by groundwork, I think I'm actually again going to poke that into two parts. One
mm-hmm.
is the groundwork that you do from your standard sources. Like you went and read like Cracking the PM interview.
Right.
You went and did like PM exercises and all that. So you did all the standard things you have. But the second level of groundwork, which is where great PMs actually succeed or do it very well, is resourcefulness.
Mm-hmm.
have you contacted people in my company, or have you contacted your seniors from college in giving some mock interviews? Because that would have told you that you're not there yet in terms of problem solving and product design.
Right.
And if you haven't done that, right, that makes me question your decision-making abilities.
Right.
So a lot of people see interviews as a, like, oh, but this is anyway the question that is not going to come later on when I'm actually doing the job. Why are you focusing too much on that?
Right.
The point is not that. The point, it's the same debate I had in college around CGPAs and all, right? People were like, there are always two groups, like, you don't have to have a high CGPA.
Yeah.
And the other is, like, you have to have a high CGPA. And my take has always been, it's not about high CGPA or not. They just tell me what you were doing those 4 years of your college.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you either did a high CGPA and that is great, or you didn't have a good CGPA. You actually went ahead and played sports. You did a couple of other things. You did startups. You did a lot of things.
Right.
Are you enthusiastic about doing things or not? Right?
Right.
And similarly, in interviews also, how resourceful are you? Like, have you done 5 other things that other candidates have not done? Because believe me, when you get into this role, it's going to be even more difficult.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Getting the interview is even like easier than the role.
That's true.
So, also, that is, I think, resourcefulness, decision making, and everything else, actually, the seriousness actually shows in either the enthusiasm markers or like the groundwork markers, right? And that's some great advice.
Yeah, that's some great advice, Deepak. Thank you so much for your time. This has been nothing short of great. Right, a lot to take away for our listeners from this episode. So yeah, thank you so much for your time. And
sure, Arjo, it has been a real pleasure talking to you and being on the show. Wish you all the best.
Thanks, Deepak. Take care.
What really stood out to me was the process to arrive at the North Star and how, with an example, Deepak was able to put things in context. Do check out Deepak's book, Tech Simplified, if you're a PM who does not have a core computer science tech background and would like to understand tech a little more. If you're interested in solving product case challenges or experiencing what a PM does by stepping into the shoes of a product manager in a live program, you should check out pmschool.io and apply now. We'll be back with another one very soon. Until then, stay curious and stay safe. This is your host, Arjav Jain, signing off.